The name of our guest's book says it all, or just about. Alphabet Juice. The energies, gists, and spirits of letters, words, and combinations thereof. Their roots, bones, innards, piss, pips, and secret parts. Tinctures, tonics, and essences with examples of their usage, foul and savory. Wow, that's a mouthful. So if you are a language buff or a lifelong learner curious about words and word origins and word usage, I hope you will join us this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 past 8 on this Tuesday, December the 2nd. We will talk all about language this hour with Roy Blunt. You hear him weekends here on the Ideas Network on the NPR quiz show Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. He's a panelist on Wait, Wait, but he is many other things. He is a columnist for the Oxford American. He is president of the Authors Guild. He is a member of Penn and the Fellowship of Southern Writers. And he is the author of the new book, Alphabet Juice. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Morning, Joy. You did an excellent job on that subtitle.
Well, that's quite the subtitle, but you cover a lot in this book, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, I've always been fascinated with words, and I've always had the notion that words, the sounds of words, are important to their meaning, at least in great many cases. And then I encountered the notion in linguistics textbooks that the relation between words and their meanings is arbitrary, and that got my back up, and I began to make the case that lots of words have not just obvious onomatopoeic words like snap, crackle, and pop, but words like rickety and queasy have a certain kinesthetic relevance to their meaning.
Yeah, speaking of snap, crackle, and pop, we have a little bit of interference on our telephone line. So maybe we'll try to call back, because sometimes that helps. Sometimes we can get a little better connection, and we'll see, because this is too good to miss. You don't want to miss any of Roy Blunt's words. We'll talk about words and word usage based on his book, Alphabet Juice. And I'm curious to know if you have a question about the origin of a word. Do you have a favorite word, maybe one that makes you laugh or you like the way it feels as it rolls off your tongue? Call us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You can also send us an email, talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. And we, I think, have reestablished contact with our guest, Roy Blunt. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Am I crackling now?
Not too much. Not too much. But tell us once again about Alphabet Juice. You actually call it Alphabet Juice, I suspect, because you go through letter by letter, A through Z, and all sorts of information about various words starting with that letter.
Yeah. The alphabetical is a lovely order. It's a very handy order, and it enables me to toss in all sorts of miscellaneous information about words. It also enables me to talk about letters themselves.
You know, I read enough of the book to know that you don't like being asked, what's your favorite word?
That's true, yeah, because it's the favorite is perhaps my least favorite word, because there's so many words. I mean, sometimes I'm asked that, and I say chicken, just to move the discussion along, but I've never been able to name my favorite of anything.
Yeah, and why did you say chicken when forced?
Well, I like chicken, and it's got two sounds in it that are fun to pronounce. One, the ch sound, which we run into in ka-ching and you betcha and rock with you, all sorts of cha-cha, Chattanooga choo-choo. And it also has a K in it, which is nice, sort of, you know, when you go to a horse or go to someone whose attention you would romantically like to attract, you use a K. So there's you got two nice sounds working there. K is also a funny letter.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And the Sunshine Boys points out that they're trying to get him to do a commercial for Frumpies, and he says Frumpies is not funny. Words with K's in them are funny.
Yeah, K's are funny. I like K's. Yeah, but why would you use a K word if you want to be romantic with someone?
You know, it's sort of an oral wink. You go.
Oh, I see. Well, do you have a least favorite word?
Well, I don't like the spelling M-I-C for microphone, for instance.
I was going to ask you about that because I'm guilty as charged. I guess because I work in radio.
Professional people spell mic, M-I-C. But that's Mick. You don't spell bike, B-I-C. It's, my mother taught me to read phonetically, sounding out the words, and that's a tricky proposition in English, obviously, but, there's little enough phonetic consistency in English as it is, and to throw away the standard old-time spelling M-I-K-E, which rhymes with like and Ike and bike and trike, and substitute M-I-C, which rhymes with Bic and I don't know what else.
Yeah, do you have
it's a shame.
Besides misspelling Mike, do you have any other pet peeves when it comes to language and how it's evolving?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, the people who use disinterested to mean uninterested are giving me make me feel bad. But that, we just might as well give in and go on with that because people, disinterested is supposed to mean impartial and uninterested is supposed to mean traditionally that means to not have any interest, but people use disinterested to mean uninterested, and so we might as well just accept it. But it's kind of a shame because then we lose the original meaning of disinterested, and then there's the expression beg the question. People, it traditionally meant to assume what is to be proven, like as in have you stopped beating your wife? But now people use it to mean just it raises the question or it prompts the question. So we might as well just give up on that.
Yeah, so you think we should give up? You're not one of these sticklers who wants to...
Well, I think it's worth pointing out the old distinction. But if you're talking on the radio and you use the expression, people are going to misunderstand it. So it's best not to use it.
Yeah, in fact, you wrote about pronunciation of names. Even if you're using the correct pronunciation,
that's
everybody's
right.
going to think you're wrong because they're used to hearing something else.
Like W.E.B. Du Bois is right, not Du Bois.
Yeah. So, what do you want people to take away from Alphabet Juice?
Well, I just think it's words are. There's a great deal of pleasure in words and in reflecting on how they're used and how they roll around in your mouth. And I think that writers are getting away from kind of sonic and kinesthetic pleasures that that words. There's a Alan First, who's a really good espionage novelist, said in the New York Times recently that he writes translator's English as if it were translated from another language. And there's a kind of trend toward that sort of, it appeals to the global market, I'm sure. But I prefer stylists like Mark Twain and Pauline Kael and H.L. Mencken, who enjoyed the sound of words and how they tripped off the tongue and who used that in their work and enabled them to be more appreciative of a lot of things, to be more appreciative of the sound of words.
Coming up later this afternoon, Roy Blunt on Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Talk of the Nation, a show I'm sure you're familiar with.
Uh-huh.
And Talk of the Nation is going to talk about texting and how text messaging of the younger generation is viewed by some as troublesome, like the abbreviations that are used so much and how that's changing language for young people, like LOL or OMG. You actually mentioned in the book that it's not OMG anymore.
Yeah, OMFG, which is really awful, it seems to me. I mean, that's you lose a lot of the real meanings of any of those letters.
Yes. But, are you concerned about the texting of the kids today?
Well, I wish they. I find it odd that they tend to stand next to each other and text to each other. it does have when you spell you're. You are. It's kind of, it's strikes me as unfortunate. But I can see why they've got to squeeze a lot of things into a small space. And it's interesting, the ingenuity of, you know, when you spell late, L with a numeral 8, it's sort of interesting the what people come up with in order to adapt to that those constrictions. It's sort of like a verse form or a you know, or headlines in a newspaper. You have to come up with new words and new spellings. So I'm interested in it, but I just hope people don't start writing. I guess, in fact, people have written texting novels, which strikes me as okay, as long as they don't replace novels written in English.
That would be pretty hard for me to read. Though one of the excerpts in your book that I found fascinating is when you spelled all the words wrong except the first letter and the last letter, an entire paragraph, and I was able to read it and understand it, even though you had mixed up all the letters in between. Isn't that fascinating that we can actually, for the most part, understand the written word even if there's all those misspellings?
Yeah, in a skimmy sort of way, we can. I mean, the eye sort of assumes that the word that would fit in context there is the word that is there, but I don't know. A friend of mine read my book, and I had a thing in there about malapropisms and talked about the Shakespearean character Dogberry, who says things like, comparisons are odorous. And my friend emailed me and said, you know, I was brought up, my mother was always saying to us kids, comparisons are odious. What's wrong with comparisons are odious? And I had to tell him that nothing wrong with comparisons are odious. He had just read it wrong. That Dogberry said comparisons are odorous.
So and, sometimes you make good
and people
mistake,
do tend to sort of skip over the middle parts of words. But if you read slowly and carefully and with relish, I think that you will notice that the words are what they are.
Our guest is Roy Blunt, Jr. He's a panelist on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And he is also the author of the book Alphabet Juice. And we are talking about the ABCs of language, words, and their usage, and welcoming your questions for him, or maybe some examples of words that you like. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along. Hope you stay tuned. Ben Marins is with you this afternoon for At Issue with Ben Marins between 4 and 6 this afternoon. Coming up after 5, Ben's guest says that many babies available for international adoption may not be orphans at all. Find out more about that coming up after 5 this afternoon. We are talking about words and their usage this hour with Roy Blunt, Jr., who is the author of Alphabet Juice. And our lines are full for the moment, so let's go right to the phones and take our first caller, Reese in Bailey's Harbor. Hi, Reese, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I had a pet peeve word, and then I had a story of a word encounter the other day. My pet peeve word is when people use reiterate when they should just use iterate, because literally reiterate would be to re-repeat something. And then my encounter with the word yesterday, I encountered, I think it was a misspelling in a book. The word was supposed to be mobility, and it looked like motility. But then I thought, well, that would be a great word for those people in, you know, shopping malls or whatever that ride around on motorized scooters, because it combines motor with mobility, motility.
So create a new word.
Yeah. I think there is a word, motility. I don't know what it means, but I think, I don't know, maybe I'll
It was a book of philosophy, so who knows?
Yeah, that's right. Could be anything.
Now, what about iterate? Should we say iterate, not reiterate?
Yeah, in fact, I think these days in computers and online stuff, the word iterate is coming back because it's used a lot. You know, every iteration is often used in talking about you know, updating online news and things like that. So. People have been saying reiterate for a long time, and of course you could reiterate, you can re-repeat something, but iteration is an unusual case of an old, simple word coming back.
Thanks very much, Reese, for the call. We'll go now to Chet in Maguanago. Hi, Chet. You're on the air.
Hello.
Yes.
Lovely show. I'm a teacher, and in the younger grades, I tried to emphasize the importance of the words, and then in the other grades, I was trying to tell the children how hard it is to get in someone else's thoughts, you know? And I thought it was really important that we realize that how important the word is, because as human beings, I guess we're at we're the pinnacle of creation, right? And so how else can you communicate? How else can you find out what someone else is thinking or what great thoughts they're having without words? That's just not the value of
the tentacle of creation. That's an interesting expression.
It's a personal feeling. I just, you know, it's that, you know, there's nothing more refined, I think, than the human being.
That's a good point. I'll start thinking of myself as a tentacle. By the way, there is such a word as motile or motile, meaning capable of moving spontaneously, like motile or motile cells.
Yeah, in fact, I think my producer looked it up, and usually a term used like sperm motility in fertility treatments.
Uh-huh.
So,
well,
there you go.
Yeah.
Our next caller is Richard in Caledonia. Hi, Richard. You're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
My usage of the different words, idea and ideal.
Hmm.
I mean, I was taught, like, you know, to have, like, American ideas.
Uh-huh.
It was more proper than ideals.
Well, there are two different things. An idea is, you know, a thought, a notion. And an ideal is a sort of thing to aspire to, a high notion of behavior that, you know, an ideal is, so ideal means perfect. But an idea is just something, it could be a bad idea, but ideals are usually something that spur us on to higher achievement, whereas ideas can spur us on to mistakes.
Right. I think, Richard, you sometimes hear people use ideal when they mean idea.
Yes, and that really annoys me.
Yeah. And what else did you had something else you wanted to talk about?
That was it.
Oh, all right. I thought Richard wanted to talk actually about, do you know the origin of the word of liberal, political liberal?
Well, like every other political word, it tends to be used according to whether you like liberals or not. But I've always thought that liberals were people who believed in improving things and had a kind of, liberal comes from words like liberate and liberty, meaning to free things up. And I'm liberal-minded means broad-minded and willing to accept new ideas.
I thought I read in your book something about liberals now wanting to be called progressives.
Well, liberal has turned into a bad word in the ears of a lot of people, so or at least a very vague word. You know, there's so many years of Republican administrations have hammered in the notion that liberals are evil. So progressive has a little more positive spin these days, I guess. Whatever it takes to make progress sound good.
We are talking with Roy Blunt, Jr. He is a panelist for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, also a columnist for Oxford American and the president of the Authors Guild. He is the author of the book Alphabet Juice, which goes through the alphabet, A through Z, talking about words and their usage and their origin and just about everything you want to know about words. And we are answering your questions, at least Roy Blunt is, 1-800-642-1234, toll free from anywhere. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also let us know, what is your language pet peeve? Is there something you hear that you want to put a stop to? Let us know what it is. talk@wpr.org or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Coming up later this afternoon, we are going to hear Talk of the Nation between 1 and 3 this afternoon. Coming up after 2 o'clock, some people read text messages and they see the end of civilization. Others see extraordinary new language invented by young people. After two on Talk of the Nation, the fuss about texting. So if you enjoy talking about language, you'll want to be with us after two this afternoon. We were trying to reestablish contact with our guest because of the quality of the phone line, and we are still trying to get Roy Blunt back on the air. The book is so interesting that we want to hear what he has to say about it, and I apologize for the technical difficulties. Good, we have him back, and I'm sure it'll be better because it was the first time we did it. Let's go back to the phones. Daryl in Coot Rae is with us. Hi, Daryl, you're on the air. Daryl, are you there? Go ahead.
Yes. Can Mr. Blunt, can you comment on why words, when rhymed, seem easier to comprehend and digest, as in poems or songs, or am I off base in that observation?
Well, they're easier to remember. The lines are easier to remember when they're rhymed, because it gives you a little order, a little framework in your head to roses are red, violets are blue, sugar is sweet, and so is you. So is you, so are you. Is easier to remember than, well, there's some red flowers and there's some blue flowers, and you're pretty nice yourself.
You have, and I can't find it now, but you had a start of a book that was in rhyme. Do you remember that off the top of your head? That
the
was in
start of a book?
Yeah, wasn't it? You said here's what might be the start of my next book, and you wrote a rhyme.
Oh, I've forgotten. Yeah, obviously, yeah. I didn't rhyme it well enough because I forgot. Give me the first word.
I'll look for it. That's what I can't find it right off the bat. So I will look for it, and in the meantime, take Jack in Oak Creek, who is our next caller. Hi, Jack.
Hi. Say, could your guest comment, in the last 6 or 9 months, I keep hearing this new word, tell the narrative, as opposed to tell the story, which is a more simple understanding type term. Why is this word narrative come into the vocabulary recently?
Well, I think professors like to shake things up from time to time and you know, come up with a new term so that we all have to learn. But narrative is a little different, I suppose, from story. Stories, narrative is pretty much anything you tell, whereas, you could just, a story suggests that it has a beginning, middle, and end, and a certain shape to it, and you know when it's over. But narrative can kind of just rattle on along.
Yeah, there are some people that want to use big words rather than small words because it makes them sound smarter, like utilize instead of use.
Yeah, that's right. The shorter words tend to have more punch.
Yeah, and you would be a fan of using the shorter words?
Yeah, or? Sure, certainly use over utilize, but if you want to sound like you are not, sometimes good, simple English words take on too much power, and so people like to rise above them and tack a lot of other syllables onto them so that it sounds official and corporate.
Yeah. You have a little section in here about very short sentences, like very effective one-word sentences.
Yeah, like forget about it.
Forget about it. And it's okay to just have a one-word sentence.
Well, sure. Why not? Like, stop. You don't want to say, oh, please, could you maybe cease your activity? You want to say, stop or quit.
Yeah, yeah. And you had you also had two-word sentences and three-word sentences, but it was fun. Let's go to our next caller, John in Menominee. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi. You gave a list of credits for Roy, but isn't he also a frequent contributor to A Prairie Home Companion?
Yeah, over the years I've been on that a number of times. Garrison and I are good friends, and it's a wonderful show to go on. You never know whom you're going to encounter backstage, people who, make sounds with their noses or one thing or another, and also it's wonderful musicians. I love being on that show.
I played
all sorts of characters in sketches. Mm-hmm. I was once Thoreau, and I was once a foolish virgin. I've been all sorts of things on Prairie Home Companion.
Yeah, and John, you had a question?
Yeah, when something is new, we often say that it's new, but sometimes we say it's brand new. Why?
Brand spanking new. How about that?
Yeah.
It just adds a little. New gets old after a while, I guess, and we need to punch it up a little bit. I don't know, brand, I guess, that's interesting, why we use that with, maybe it suggests this, you just suddenly, like when you put a brand on a cow, and the cow jumps up and it has a lot of punch to it. Brand new is when it's just still smoking on the hide.
Yeah, hot off the press. I'm guilty of using that, so I'm
nothing wrong with that. Seems to me.
Yeah, Bunny in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Bunny. You're on the air.
Good morning. The word hopefully is something that really bothers me a lot.
Yeah, me too. I think the problem with hopefully is that, for instance, when if L.L. Bean notifies you, hopefully your order will arrive by Christmas, you don't know whether it's L.L. Bean hoping or you hoping. You know, it's just sort of, I want to know who's hoping. If you say, we hope it arrives by Christmas, then at least you know they're trying.
Well, hopefully, Bunny, your call will help put an end to that.
Oh, teasing. I agree with him completely. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bunny, for the call. This is fun. Tim in Appleton is with us. Hi, Tim.
Hello. I recently watched the movie The Scarlet Pimpernel, a 1935 or so version, and the leading actor kept on saying the phrase sink me, S-I-N-K-M-E. Huh. Do you know the meaning of this?
Sink me?
Yes.
Gosh, I don't know. It sounds like some kind of, I don't know.
Sink. I don't know either.
Are you sure? I mean, it's not
sure.
Like get me synchronized. That's not what he meant. Sure.
No.
I guess he means maybe, you know, well, you could have floored me or dig me a hole and put me in it. I don't know. In what context does he use this?
Well, he would just say it offhandedly as somebody would be talking to him, and he would say, sink me, as if I don't know what I'm doing or, you know, fooled me or something.
Well, it beats me or something.
Could be. I plugged it into Google, and the first thing that came up was the Scarlet Pimpernel, so it's an allusion to that movie, but I couldn't find the meaning.
Well, I'll have to look into that. Google is where to go, I guess.
Interesting. But, I have never heard that.
Yeah, maybe it was just something the Scarlet Pimpernel used to say.
Well, thanks, Tim, for the call. Maybe one of our producers has a moment to see if they can look up on the computer some meaning for sink me, the phrase sink me.
Yeah.
See if we'll have any better luck. Carol in Green Bay is with us now. Hi, Carol. You're on the air.
Hi. You know, it always bugs me how people constantly turn nouns into verbs, like impacting. And the one I really hate is referencing, when they mean refer to.
Yeah.
But that seems now to be just the way people speak it. They don't say refers to. They say referencing now. What do you think of that? Do you think that's just
natural?
Yeah, I have
the same reactions to that.
We should try to avoid that.
Say, please do not reference my mother in those terms.
Yeah, right.
And it's sort of like saying, instead of I differ with you on that, you say I difference you on that.
Right.
People think it sounds good, but it seems to me just a very trendy and unnecessary way of saying refer to.
You know, Carol, I think impact also comes from journalism and people writing leads to news stories that have more impact, you know, that they mm-hmm. want it to sound more powerful or be a grabber. So they use impact rather than effect or something along those lines.
Yeah, impact is a good solid noun. There's no doubt about that. But when you say, I hope I have impacted you effectively today, then you're...
It sounds like an impacted molar or something.
Yeah, that's right. I hope I have compacted your teeth.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Carol, for the call. Next, we have Jennifer in Duluth. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Joy. I just wanted to say my pet peeve in language is the use of the prefix pre. I hear people say they pre-plan things.
Oh, yeah.
Or that something is pre-recorded.
Yeah. pre-recorded,
so
pre-planned is unnecessary. I mean, if you planned it, then you can't plan something except ahead of time. So, I mean, there's no such thing as post-planning. So, but there again, pre-planning probably sounds like it's more active and busy, but it's fake activity.
And when I go to Bayfield to pick blueberries or apples, sometimes you can buy them pre-picked. And I think, well, that doesn't make any sense at all. That means they're still on the vine.
Pre-picked, yeah. as opposed to picked right on the spot. Or
right.
Picked after you buy them. Well, you can just buy a tree full of apples, and they'll go pick them.
There you go.
Yeah, I guess it's opposed to pick your own, but no, that doesn't work. We are talking about words, the origin of words, usage of words with Roy Blunt Jr., who you hear on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me as a panelist, the NPR quiz show heard weekends on the Ideas Network and apparently also on a Prairie Home Companion from time to time. He is a lover of language, and he is the author of the book Alphabet Juice. We are welcoming your questions about language, your pet peeves about language, your questions about the origin of words, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up after 9 o'clock, Kathleen Dunn and her guests will discuss the recent terror attacks in Mumbai, India, and the consequences for Indian and Pakistani relations. That's in our next hour after 9 o'clock. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Roy Blunt Jr., author of Alphabet Juice. And our next caller is Nancy in Grafton. Hi, Nancy. You're on the air.
Good morning. I was just wondering, since this the election is over and now all these people are being vetted, what the heck does that mean? Where did that come from?
Interestingly enough, that word derives from the word veterinarian. What it means is examined and checked out, and the vetters go through and find out if there's anything they should know. If there are any skeletons in the in these people's closets, but it derives oddly enough from veterinarian. I guess originally it was horses and dogs that were vetted.
Thank you very much, Nancy, for the call. We have an email from Andrew in Milwaukee. It's a pet peeve of mine that the Y's is used to create adverbs rather than the correct adverb money-wise. Instead of finance, I'm sorry, I guess I'm not understanding this email. It's a little bit jumbled.
Money-wise, yeah. Speaking word wise, you can just tack wise on the end of almost anything and not have to come up with a better word.
Gene in Ashland emails, I see a lot of people who mean to say one thing but accidentally say the exact opposite. Mm. Why does that happen?
Well, the prime example of that is the word literally. People say, I literally fell through the floor,
mm-hmm.
which means I figuratively fell through the floor. If you literally fell through the floor, then you fell through the floor. But people just, the opposite, literally meaning the opposite thing is just caught on. I don't know, because it somehow has a nice ring to it, I guess, and it's a shame. But that happens quite a lot in English. But in writing, you should not do that. It's just to use the word, especially such a literal word. I mean, it comes from the word letter. And, of course, since I'm very interested in alphabet juice, I'm very interested in letters and what they betoken.
Yeah. The email from Andrew, I think what he means here is that his pet peeve is just having Y's added on to words like money-wise or weather-wise, or instead of instead of just using making up words along those lines.
Yeah, motility-wise.
there we go.
Encyclopedia-wise. Yeah.
Francisco in Whitefish Bay is with us. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I've got two big pet peeves. First, the overuse of myself. People being afraid to use the word me.
Yeah, I hate that too. Yeah. The wife and myself will be attending church at 11 a.m. Yeah, it sounds more impressive than the wife and I. Or I was even Barack Obama has said recently that the president has invited Michelle and myself to the White House, and I certainly voted for Barack, but he needs to watch his pronouns.
I noticed that too. And then the other thing is, could care less.
Yeah.
That's nails on a chalkboard.
Right. Could care less is illogical, and couldn't care less sounds sort of prissy, I think, and neither one of them is very convincing, if you notice. Anytime people say, I could care less, or I couldn't care less, they clearly could. They clearly care more than they want to admit.
Could you care less or not if people use the word ain't? Roy.
I like the word ain't. Mm-hmm. It's an old, in the 18th century, it was considered standard and perfectly acceptable. Then in the 19th century, the Victorian prissiness turned it into an improper word. You know, but it, in fact, is the only contraction of am not. And we wouldn't want Fats Waller to have sung am not misbehaving.
Patricia from Milwaukee emails this, sink me, an English curse, especially popular among sailors. It is short for sink me to the devil.
Well, that's interesting. I've learned a new expression here. I don't think it's going to be very useful out there in Massachusetts where I live, but if I were a sailor, maybe it would be. I'd probably know it already. Sing it. So it's sort of like I'll be damned, I guess.
Right, or go to H or something like that. You mentioned times and places. There are regional words, too, and phrases. I know that in Wisconsin, we're known for saying things that aren't said in other parts of the country, like bubbler. Do you know what a bubbler is, Roy Blunt?
I do not, unless it's a water fountain.
That's what it is.
I guess I must have heard it somewhere, probably while passing through Milwaukee.
It could be, yeah. The bubbler, named after a Kohler company, which makes water fountains and toilet items, it was a brand name, a bubbler.
And bubbler, I like that a lot.
That's where it came from.
Bubble is a fun word to say, and bubbler is even better.
Yeah. What do you call that when words roll off the tongue like that and you think they're fun to say? You have a word for that.
Well, yeah, the words that whose sound or whose kinesthetic properties relate to the meaning I call sonicky. Words like rickety, which is not, you know, linguists will allow that there are obvious onomatopoeic words like, as I mentioned earlier, snap, crackle, and pop. But I think there are lots of words like the word through starts in the front of your mouth and moves right back. It's unlike the word thwart, which starts in the front and then your lips throw a W up in front of it. Mm-hmm. And throttle, which goes back into your glottis, which evokes being throttled. At any rate, words that are fun to say last longer and have more meanings. Words like bust and stuff can mean several different things, and I think it's because people like to toss them in. They're fun to say, and they appeal to the ear.
We'll go now to Luba in Madison. Hi, Luba. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. I have two comments and some explanations needed. You know, whenever I read a sentence with a double negative, it always stops me and I have to think, and it really destroys my reading. And I know that differences are subtle, but anyway, it still bothers me. That's number one. And number two is the word but, used with other words, and I really would like a good source that I can where I can find out all of its usages. Could you help me?
The word but?
Yes.
Well, you can look it up in the dictionary. That's what, you know, but seems to me, I don't know how you can get along without the word but. You mean but as in except, and but as in on the other hand, and but as in however. You know, I've noticed that people use yet a lot, where they used to use but. Yet is the new but. But when we start having this conversation, we begin to sound like we're not speaking English. Yet is the new but. But I've never had problems with the word but.
Right, yeah. Luba, you have a problem with hearing or reading the word but?
Well, not. I know that, like, other than such and such, I mean, you know, I can understand that, and I know but as an exception, but there are some times when something, a sentence appears very ambiguous to me, and I wish I had an example, and I don't.
Well, it may well have just been badly written, that sentence, and it's the writer's fault and not yours.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Thank you very much, Luba, for the call. We're moving now to Sarah in Delavan. Hi, Sarah. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning. Roy, I love you. I think you're wonderful. Thank you so much for being on.
Thank you, Sarah.
A lot of this, as a dyslexic, a lot of this language kind of flies over my head because I don't get it anyway. But one of the words that really bothers me that people use is, now I can't remember it. I had it in my mind. Jeez, it's part of it.
I see it here, Sarah, irregardless.
Yes, thank you very much. Oh. Irregardless. It just annoys me when people use it. It's like, irregardless, you mean regardless, right? Not
right,
irregardless.
Yeah, the ear and the less mean the same thing, so it ought to just be regardless. I think we heard another example of that earlier on, that sort of thing. Well, reiterate is redundant. Irregardless, yeah, is not very, it sounds impressive perhaps because it has an extra syllable, but in fact it is not good English.
I'm looking at a word that you write on the surface is an ugly word, knowledgeable.
Yeah, well, if you look at it, look at all those D's and G's and B's all jammed in together, knowledgeable. And it doesn't, and, you know, it's often used in sort of pompous context. You know, our guest here is very knowledgeable in the field of quantum mechanics instead of, our guest here knows a lot about quantum mechanics. But to me, the word knowledgeable also just looks like a pile of letters jumbled up together, perhaps because jumble and knowledgeable somehow, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I know that my spell check always turns on when I try to write that word.
Knowledgeable.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like ignorantable. You know, ignorant will do.
We will go now to Shirley in Prentice. Hi, Shirley, you're on the air.
Hello, Joy. I'm rather bemoaning the loss of the gracious phrase, you're welcome. The host will say thank you to the guest, and in turn the guest will say thank you or no problem.
No problem,
instead of saying my pleasure or saying you're welcome.
Yeah, if there's no problem, then why did I thank you for it? You know, on the other hand, in commercial transactions, I've gotten, you know, in shopping and in, I don't know, going to a restaurant, anything, I find myself saying thank you more than necessary. You know, I'm people who work in a shop must say thank you 400 times a day. And I'd sort of like to hear, maybe we could shorten it to ta. You know, in England they say ta or cheers or something. But yeah, if you thank someone, and I mean, if someone thanks you, you should say you're welcome.
Simple thank you, that. Shirley, for the call. I think people are just trying to be, you know, polite, and that's why they do that.
Yeah, no problem.
No problem. De nada.
Put me out at all.
Grish in Stoughton. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Joy. Nice to be on your program. Very fond of language, so I thought, like, I would say something like I wanted to say, like my daughter speaks,
like she got
a good grade, like...
Why do teenage girls, especially, or tween girls, do that?
I don't know. I was like, don't call me about that. You know, it's just a habit. It's just, and also the word like is sort of fun to say, especially if you don't have anything much to say. You can just say, well, I was like, it was like, you know. In some ways, I mean, I find myself saying, we must have driven like 500 miles, you know, like meaning something, you know, something like, or approximately 500 miles. But when you use like in every sentence, meaning said, or I don't know, like is, there you go, it's got that K in it, and it's in it, as long as they don't start spelling it lick, L-I-C, which if we go back to
right.
earlier
to the mic
thing.
Eve
of mine.
Yeah,
Eve, by the way, is a wonderful word.
Yeah, where does that come from?
Well, I don't know, on a peevish, it's it sounds like it ought to sound. I don't know. I'll have to look it up. But I think it's just one of those old words that popped into cavemen's heads when somebody did something they didn't like. And they didn't hit people. It wasn't a big enough offense to hit them over the head with a club, but it sure did make them peevish.
Like seems to me to be one of those verbal tics, like you know,
mm-hmm.
or a word to be a filler.
Yeah, I use the word just and the word really far too often. Myself, especially in conversation, and when somebody interviews me and then I see it written down, I think, oh, did I say really about 12 times? That's a shame.
Or frankly, or basically.
Yeah.
The next caller is Nate in Elkhorn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just have a pronunciation question about the term short-lived. When I was in college, I had a professor that told me it's actually pronounced short-lived.
Yeah, short-lived is the preferred traditional pronunciation. It's a thing with a short life. You know, neither one of them really kind of, you know, short-lived means that, short-living would be... would make sense, but short-lived doesn't really kind of make sense if you think about it. Short-lived comes closer to anything with a short life, but it's idiomatic and I don't know, it's kind of a bothersome word, because neither one quite makes sense, but short-lived is preferred.
And she was the only person that I ever heard pronounce it that way.
Mm. Well, now we've both pronounced it that way several times.
Yeah.
All right,
on the radio,
well, thank you.
Maybe we can establish. But people are starting to say short-lived a lot, and I don't think you're going to get fired for saying short-lived, whatever your job is.
Thank you, Nate. Roddy in Milwaukee is with us next. Hi, Roddy.
My question is, a lot of times I have friends or people that I know, and we're talking, and they ask a question, and at the end of the question, they'll say, or no. And no one ever says, or yes, it's just always, or no, and I just always ask them, well, which question do you want me to answer?
Well, it's like, or not, I guess. Do you want to go to the mall or not? It's the same thing as or no, I guess. It gives you a chance to, you know, especially if somebody, if you say, oh, do you want to go to the mall with me? I don't know why I'm using all these teenage examples, but... You know, if they don't answer right away, I guess you say, or no. Give them a chance to say no.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah,
it sounds like a tick, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it sounds like another regionalism to some extent.
Yeah,
too.
I think so, maybe.
Well, Roy Blunt, we're talking about all these pet peeves for most of the hour. Is there a word or two in our final minute that you want to hear more of?
More of? Ooh. Well, let's see. I don't know. There's so many nice words, as I say. That's a good question.
Besides chicken.
I would like to hear the expression alphabet juice more often, which means that people will be buying my book and people will be saying thank you and they'll be saying you're welcome. I like the word sonicky, which I invented for this word, for this book. It seems to me a useful term, a term for words that reflect their meaning, either in their sound or in the way they move through the mouth. Words like, as I say, rickety and queasy. And, you know, if a caveman had no verbal tradition at all, he or she might well have come up with, when he or she felt a certain way, might well have come up with the word nausea.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Roy Blunt, very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy. I enjoyed it.
Roy Blunt is a panelist on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me and author of Alphabet Juice. Thanks to Carmen Jackson, Rob Ferret, and Cynthia Schuster for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.